Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 6th day of September, 2022, first day after a long Labor Day weekend, when hopefully at least a lot of Americans had a chance to talk with their neighbors and realize what's been going on in the country while they were somnambulating their way through to a totalitarian regime. And I certainly hope at least some of that was going on here locally, too. And it's certainly happening in the Czech Republic, and they at least have the wisdom and the hindsight of history to look back on. I have a friend who was born there, pointed this story out to me over the weekend, and at least now it's starting to get some alternative media anyway coverage. The winner of discontent began Rod Dreher for the American Conservative, that could bring down governments, hopefully it will, folks, began over the weekend with a massive demonstration in the Czech capital of Prague, where about 70,000 people filled Wenceslas Square, according to police estimates, some carrying signs denouncing the country's membership in the European Union and NATO military alliance. Massive Czech inflation, and obviously they're not alone, driven by surging housing costs and, of course, spiking out-of-control energy prices, currently the highest since 1993, the central banksters are forecasting it to peak around 20% over coming months, was dismissed by the socialist Czech prime minister as all of it a conclave of Russian sympathizers and dupes. Is any of this starting to sound familiar, folks? Well, except for the part of masses of people waking up to it. The story says, through friends in Romania, that that country, too, is experiencing a similar anger awakening. And if you saw the stories out of the German government over the last few days, it basically boils down to, we could care less if the German citizenry is freezing and they die in the streets this winter. Your opinions don't count for squat with us. We're going to support Ukraine right down to the last German. We'll come back to some later fallout on that front in a minute, but first a couple of stories from closer to home, where at least the potential for the truth to leak out and awaken a few more sleepers is very real. Boom, says a piece from Jim Hoft in the Gateway Pundit, a federal judge has revealed that the incumbent lying imposter in the White House, oh yeah, you know who it is, Joe the Biden-Fuhrer, ordered the FBI access to Mar-a-Lago documents that they lied through their damnable teeth about for as long as they could get away with. Remember, it says back on Monday, August 8, 2022, the Biden, SS, Gestapo, NKVD, FBI, DOJ raided the home of President Trump at Mar-a-Lago, rifling through his home and belongings for 9 hours. They even ransacked 16-year-old Barron Trump's room and First Lady Melania Trump's closet. There are stories, at least somewhat unconfirmed, about the scumbags there posing literally with her underwear and similar kinds of, you can probably guess, disgusting stuff. But hey, that's the caliber of people we're talking about here. Anyway, the following day, the White House excuse for a press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, lying as usual, told reporters that the Biden White House, stupid and asleep as they were, didn't learn about the raid until they watched it on, oh, probably CNN. No, she said, the double diaper wearer was not briefed on the raid. Quote, no one at the White House was given a heads up. No one at the White House pulled their head out, I think is closer to the truth. And I certainly can't blame Americans for almost being willing to believe that. But on September the 5th, Judge Aileen Cannon granted President Trump's request for a special master review of the material confiscated by Biden's raiders during their unprecedented invasion of his home at Mar-a-Lago. And the injunction also temporarily enjoins or forbids the Biden-Fuhrer and his minions from reviewing and using the seized materials pending the completion of that review. Now, at this point, folks, your host will pause for a quick bit of analysis. What this does, among other things, is at least makes it more difficult for the criminals there to destroy, or much more likely, add faked evidence to their haul and then try to use it later. Although certainly some of us have been suspicious that was a done deal before they even pulled the trigger on this thing. And pages 2 to 3 of the ruling reveal the judge was aware that it was, in fact, the marionette in chief who ordered, or at least nodded his head or put his X on the bottom line or whatever, the FBI access to Mar-a-Lago documents and President Trump's personal belongings. Bottom line, as everybody's now beginning to figure out, and gee, this is a shocker, isn't it? Biden lied, the White House lied, now they're caught, and what else is new? Not long ago, as hopefully most listeners are aware, billionaire scumbag head of two Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, sat down with Joe Rogan and revealed what most of us had already realized long ago. Fascism and all its public-private partners hate the First Amendment, free speech, and anything associated with the peons' right to understand what's being done to them. It was the FBI that strong-armed them, or at least their public-private partners, all got together on the deal to hide, cover up, and deep six any information that might have come out and, as the Brits might say similarly, thrown a spanner in the works when it comes to undermining their otherwise oh-so-successful attempt to rig the 2020 election. Had the American people really known the levels of scumbaggery and skullduggery embedded in the truth hidden on that laptop from hell from the big guy's really smart son, Hunter Biden, now more properly dubbed the nation's first crackhead and, of course, hooker czar. Yeah, admitted the Zuck to Rogan, the FBI called it misinformation. And here's the translation, folks. We all knew that was a damnable lie, but hey, it gave us the excuse we needed. So what's new on the Fourth Reich's anti-free speech front today? Newly released internal emails from two Facebook and Twitter both show extensive efforts to coordinate with the Biden regime to censor users. Who could have thought it? This according to a Thursday release of information late last week by the attorneys general of two states. I guess they're not all yet on Soros' payroll. Missouri's Eric Schmidt and Jeff Landry of Louisiana. Throughout the email, says Zero Hedge's coverage, officials from within the Department of Octung, Homeland Security, and Health and Human Services, SIC, emailed two Facebook and Twitter employees with instructions on how to flag instances of alleged, and you know that was a lie, misinformation, and then guided them with talking points to counter the allegedly false narratives on the platforms. In one instance, a CDC official asked Facebook for monthly meetings so they could coordinate, plan, dare I say it, conspire their so-called debunking strategies. While in another case, a White House official requested the removal of an anti-Tony Fauci parody account. How dare you poke fun at America's Joseph Mengele? You will prostrate yourself and worship at the altar of Der Science. Said Schmidt in the joint statement, quote, we've already received a number of documents that clearly prove that the federal government had an incestuous relationship, some of us would say what it is, folks, fascist, with socialist, they didn't spell that right, media companies, and clearly coordinate to censor freedom of speech. But we're not done, he said. The DOJ is cowering behind executive privilege, which obviously applies to some fake presidents, a lot more than real ones, and they've refused to turn over communications between the highest-ranking Biden regime officials and socialist media companies. That's why yesterday, he continued, we asked the court to compel the Department of Justice to produce those records. We're just getting started. Stay tuned. There's more detail in here as well. The communications already provided show that the DOJ had, quote, a vast censorship enterprise across a multitude of federal agencies. In response to Missouri and Louisiana's interrogatories, defendants identified 45 federal officials at DHS, CISA, CDC, NIAID, oh yeah, that's Fauci's front organization, and the Office of the Surgeon General, all of which were contained in either of those two unconstitutional three-letter federal agencies that communicated with social media platforms about what they call misinformation and, of course, what they did, censorship. The joint statement points out that in those responses, defendants did not provide any information about any federal officials at any other agencies of whom they're aware who engage in such communications with social media platforms about information, I'm sorry, misinformation, as they call it, and censorship, though plaintiffs had specifically asked about this highly relevant information. Defendants' document production, they said, reveals that such officials at other federal agencies exist. For example, their emails include extensive copying of the officials at the Census Bureau, but they also include communications involving the Departments of Treasury and State. Another example, the White House was very concerned about the parody Fauci accounts, and they coordinated with who else? To Facebook to take them down. And beyond just the productions from the DOJ, they say that Meta, for example, that's the new name of those big socialist public-private partners, as you probably are aware, has disclosed that at least 32 federal officials, including senior officials at the Federal Death Agency, the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, oh, there's a whopper for you, and the White House, have communicated with Meta about content moderation on their platforms, many of whom were not disclosed in response to plaintiffs' interrogatories to defendants, i.e. folks, they lied, or at least committed a lie of omission. YouTube even disclosed 11 federal officials engaged in such communications, including officials at the Census Bureau and the White House, many of whom were also not disclosed by defendants. And the joint statement goes on to say, discovery so far demonstrates that this censorship enterprise is extremely broad, including officials in the fake White House, HHS, DHS, CISA, the CDC, NIAID, the Office of the Surgeon General, and a whole lot of other agencies evidently as well, like the Census Bureau, FDA, FBI, State Department, Treasury Department, and U.S. Election Assistance Commission. And it rises to the highest levels of the U.S. government, including a number of so-called White House officials. And defendants have objected, guess why, to producing some of the most relevant and probative information in their possession. Maybe the FBI should go and raid them, hey? Oh, well, you know that's not going to happen, don't you? But they might be willing to destroy the information if they already haven't. The censorship enterprise, they say, has been proven by the Department of Just Us and its productions thus far. But the full extent of federal officials' collusion with socialist media companies on censorship is unknown until the Department of Justice produces for the communications requested by the states of Missouri and Louisiana. And again, folks, the good news is they're just getting started. But at least we know where all of this should be headed. It is, of course, not just the communist, socialist, Fourth Reich United States that's been lying to people outright, censoring them, and then literally killing them with disinformation and, of course, bioweapons to boot. The socialist state of Israel doesn't exactly have clean hands either. A piece from Stephen Kirsch's newsletter over the weekend says proof that Israel did, in fact, although it was way late to the party, find serious safety problems with the not vaccines, supposedly, for COVID-1984, and then did what, well, Big Brother everywhere seems to love to do, deliberately covered it up. They didn't even start to gather safety data until a year in to the mandated vaccine program. When they gathered 6 months of data, he noted, and discovered that the vaccines really weren't safe, what did they do? Yeah, you know it. They lied to the whole world about it. Says Kirsch, this is the most important article I've written to date, and the single most important on his Substack, among over 700 at this point. And it should, he says, bring down the house of cards if there's just one honest person in a position of authority left in the whole world. That's, at best, TBD. Key facts in a nutshell. The Israeli health authority knew the vaccines were harming people. The side effects of the vaccine are neither mild nor short-term. In fact, 65% of the neurological cases that mentioned the duration said the symptoms are all ongoing. Furthermore, the studies that they did do established causality. The side effects were, in fact, caused by the vaccines. And that's something he notes that no one else has at least claimed they've been able to establish before, because they collected what was called rechallenged data, which most systems like VAERS do not do. They don't know, though, how serious the harm is or was, because they only looked at the data for the top five categories, and cardiovascular issues was at number six. So they've still only looked at a fraction of the data, in spite of coming to conclusions that they felt they really needed to hide. The researcher says the fourth bullet point don't even know the prevalence of these serious side effects because they were just provided with the numerator, not the denominator. In other words, very similar to what VAERS does. The Israeli authorities deliberately covered up these safety issues. They hid it from the world, issuing a false report essentially saying, quote, there's nothing new to see here, folks. Move along, move along. And the only good news in all of this, says Kirsch, is that Israel protected Palestinians from getting this very unsafe vaccine, which was, in kind of an underhanded way, almost humane of them in hindsight. But as of September 4th, in other words, Labor Day weekend, no one's being held accountable and everyone is ignoring the bombshell story. There's a press blackout on coverage in Israel. Kirsch says none of them would even reply when he contacted them about the story. They even refuse to look at the evidence. Nobody in Israel is being held accountable. And in the nationwide medical community, no one is speaking out about the corruption except for those that have already been blacklisted and deep-sixed. The worldwide waste-stream media, likewise, is continuing to do what they do, and we've been talking about the reasons why. And further, he says, no public official, public health official, or waste-stream media anywhere in the world is even calling for an investigation. Nobody wants to see the original expert report, and nobody wants to see the safety data they gathered. There's an old saying, folks, among liars and lawyers, certainly including politicians, but again, maybe I repeat myself, don't ask the question if you already know the answer, or worse still, don't want anyone else to hear it. Well, one of the things the appointed EU bureaucrats certainly don't want to hear are the shrieks, screams, and death throes of Europeans realizing they're going to freeze this winter if they don't starve to death first. On Labor Day, Zero Hedge ran this piece under the headline, "As Europe Implodes, They Plan Radical Intervention." They put it in quotes, including price setting and suspending the derivatives markets and European-wide margin call bailouts. Yeah, it says, just when you thought the narrative couldn't get any more idiotic, Europe still manages to shock just about everyone. A few days after the EU threatened commodity traders that they would stage that emergency intervention to crush energy prices, which were at that point rising at a rate of about 20% per day, maybe Europe can now begin to print natural gas and electricity just like they do fiat. Well, it was a move that actually worked for a couple of days anyway, until Putin reminded Europe who's boss when it comes to what they could do about it. Gazprom suddenly decided they would completely halt all Nord Stream 1 transit altogether due to an oil leak. That news sent global stock markets plunging, and it threatened to push European gas and power prices back to all-time highs when markets reopened on Monday, as well as forcing Sweden to follow Austria and Germany in bailing out energy companies as Nordic authorities warned of a Lehman moment. Late on Sunday, Bloomberg reported that European ministers will discuss, quote, special measures to rein in soaring energy costs. And here's the idiocy of this, folks, is if Zero Hedge hasn't been pointing it out enough already, you can't print this stuff. All of their measures to produce something out of nothing are doomed to failure. And all they'll succeed in doing, of course, is enriching themselves as they get to ration and distribute what little bit there is at prices they think they can set. Continues Zero Hedge, while anything that the EU does is doomed to fail, Europe has been scrambling to stave off an energy catastrophe that's threatening to become an economic, social, and even financial crisis as well. They shot themselves in the foot, you've heard this before, and then reloaded, and then they've been shooting themselves again and again and again ever since. Well, actually, more appropriately, they're shooting the peons who've been putting up with it, at least up until now. I'll spare you the details of the idiocy, folks, from price caps to price controls. Suffice it to say, you can't produce a natural gas molecule out of nothing. What will happen, almost without question, is that Big Brother EU and their NATO public-private partners will make what they've already made horrible, not only worse, but even more deadly. Which brings us now to today's Civil War 2.0 update. It seems that over the long Labor Day weekend, a lot of people who didn't bother to watch the Biden-Fuhrer declare war on at least half of America late last week had a chance to at least hear about it, or maybe even watch part or all of the abomination. After calling those who believe that America needs to be made great again, quote, a threat to the very soul of this country, as President Trump pointed out, making America great again would nominally be something you'd think most people would be in favor of, unless, of course, their real goal is to destroy it completely and utterly. The Biden regime seems to be doubling down. Again, why is that a surprise? And the polarization seems to be stepping up. No doubt exactly as intended. This morning, Steve Watson put out a piece entitled, Everyday Americans Respond to the Fuhrer Calling Them a, quote, Threat to the Very Soul of This Nation, saying things like, but not limited to, quote, I'm a middle-aged teacher. I teach low-income children in the worst neighborhood in my area. I raise 7 children, put myself through school while raising the first 2 alone. I am a threat to the very soul of this nation. Here's another. I'm a retired Marine with 26 years of service. I volunteer with Habitat for Humanity and at my local church. Married to the same woman for 35 years, I raise cows and chickens and wear Hawaiian print shirts. I am a threat to the very soul of this nation. Another one says, I have to squeeze all my evil doings in between caring for my elderly mom, helping with my grandkids, participating in my church and community choir, and being a wife and mom. It's a struggle, but I manage. I, too, am apparently a threat to the soul of this nation. And finally, this one. I'm an RN in an NICU, Natal Intensive Care Unit. I help save little lives. I'm raising my teen grandson. I go to the gym to try and keep myself healthy. I play music and sing in my church choir. I like to garden. I, apparently, am a threat to the very soul of this nation. From there, I want to go to some observations from one of my favorite constitutional leftists, because, well, there are so few of them, and it's certainly fun to see one who gets it, at least sometimes. This is from Sunday's New York Post column by Professor Jonathan Turley. And the Biden Fuhrer's, I'm going to call it this, no, not I have a dream, but I have a nightmare from hell speech. And it's about destroying the soul of a nation. That Philadelphia speech that was used to desecrate Independence Hall has, he says, produced sharply different responses from the media. on the Criminally Negligent Network, it was praised as, get this, folks, a rallying cry for patriots. How about Bolsheviks or maybe brown shirts? On conservative sites, says Turley, it was denounced as hateful and divisive, which is kind of obvious. But he says this, but for many of us, the optics were a glaring distraction, what with the intense red background and prominently placed Marines framing the, I'll say it, marionette-in-chief. The use of the Marines and the Marine Band, says Professor Turley, raised concern among some of us, given the clearly political propaganda, a purpose of the speech. Indeed, the networks did not view the speech as an address to the nation and refused to give the White House primetime slots. And while the lying press secretary for the White House, Karine Jean-Pierre, assured the media, and this is the proof you're looking for, folks, it's not a political speech, it was, says Professor Turley, unabashedly political, given calls to get out the vote and to direct attacks against MAGA Republicans and especially Donald Trump. That again raised the legal questions over the use of Marines in such a speech. Even CNN managed to flag the concern over the use of the Marines, and CNN White House chief correspondent Caitlin Collins stated that it was obvious that it was, quote, a very political speech. And all I can add to that is, duh, do you think? The optics of the speech, said Professor Turley, instantly became a source of internet chatter, what with the weird red background that made the faux president look like he was giving a stump speech from Dante's Inferno. Indeed, it almost had that High Chancellor Adam Sutler look from V for Vendetta. And if you haven't seen the memes, folks, showing that comparison, or, for example, the variety of memes with A-B pictures of the Biden Führer und the other Führer, Adolf, and I've seen literally dozens of pretty good ones that look like that was exactly what he was aiming for, you're probably not paying attention. Turley goes on to note that the comparison with V for Vendetta didn't end with just the optics. And others are currently suggesting, plausibly as it turns out, and no shortage of evidence, that that was exactly what the Biden Führer was looking for. Here's a headline from Stefan Stanford in the All News Pipeline. Raging madman Joe Biden was watching old newsreels of Hitler and the Third Reich before his declaration of war upon America, even using, and he's not alone in observing this because everybody got it, Third Reich color schemes, red, white, and black. And he puts it in the form of a pictorial essay showing a whole lot of those memes, comparisons, and, undeniable parallels. Still, though, says Professor Turley, it was the use of those Marine guards that most stood out to him, framing the president sick as he declared Trump supporters to be a threat to democracy. And, of course, not only enemies, but a threat to the very soul of this nation, whatever this nation now means. Even CNN couldn't miss this part. It was obviously political, as Collins said, a full frontal attack on Biden's political opponents. But, notes Professor Turley, the United States, or at least it used to, has long drawn a line between the work of federal employees in public service and the use of such employees for political purposes. The Hatch Act was passed in 1939 to curtail the political activities of civilian federal employees, and the Marine Corps itself expressly forbids personnel from being used or even participating in such political events. And here he quotes them. Active duty members will not engage in partisan political activities. Achtung, unless it is for the Biden Führer. Und all military personnel will avoid the inference, wow, that their political activities imply or appear to imply DOD sponsorship, approval, or endorsement of a political candidate, campaign, or cause, unquote. Other services, too, he says, have drawn a bright line against such appearances. Army officials, for example, stressed that their rules bar such involvement because, quote, actual or even perceived partisanship could undermine the legitimacy of the military profession and department, unquote. And who are we kidding here? Then he quotes Department of Defense Directive 1344.10 and the long list of prohibited involvement in political events, which include, well, basically exactly what the Biden Führer just shoved down Americans' throats. The rules also expressly bar the wearing of uniforms at such political speeches, saying the wearing of the uniform by service members is prohibited during or in connection with furthering political activities, private employment, or commercial interests, or when there's an inference of official sponsorship for the activity or interest that may be drawn. I guess, unless that means the inference is that they're declaring war on well over half of America. While there may be gray areas for a president who's necessarily accompanied by members of the military, admits Professor Turley, and drawing such a line may often be difficult, this one basically seems to be, dare I say it, pretty hellaciously obvious. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.